podcast where everybody's entitled to be wrong. I'm your host, Chris Demoulis.
And I'm your guest host, Natalie Goff. Today, we're asking our fussy audience to pick your take on the 1979 film, All That Jazz.
So, for our listeners, obviously we have, as Natalie stated, we have a guest host. Isaac is sick, unfortunately. He was not able to record a podcast this week, so we decided to kind of do a guest episode. And I mean, if you've listened to the show before, we've mentioned Natalie pretty much every episode at the end because she helps us with marketing and also just kind of with a lot of behind the scenes stuff on the podcast. And it's just, yeah, and also writing partner and kind of a partner in life and a great one of my best friends. So cool to have you on the podcast, just up front. But yeah, I'll let you introduce yourself, I guess.
Wow, that was so nice introduction. Thank you. I really appreciate you guys letting me be involved with this at all. I really enjoy your guys' show. I'm just also a fan. I'd listen to your show outside of just trying to help with the marketing. Hello, everyone. I am a writer, editor, property manager, dog walker, and tutor, in addition to helping with the marketing for this show. And I, as Chris said, I'm very lucky to be his life partner and friend. So if you guys will bear with me, I'm excited to be here with you all.
I'm excited as well, and I'm sure Isaac's excited, but he is sick, so he's probably blowing his nose or something right now. But
hopefully getting better, getting some sleep.
We hope you're feeling well, Isaac. Drink lots of water.
Warm cup of
My mom something. Always said, drown. Drown the sickness. so this week, mother. We're talking about a film called All That Jazz, and it was released on December 20th, 1979 by the studios Columbia Pictures and 20th Century Fox. It's directed by Bob Fosse, and it's written by Robert Allen Arthur and Bob Fosse. It stars Roy Scheider, just him, top billing, separate from everyone else at first, and then also starring Jessica Lange, Anne Reinking, Leland Palmer, Cliff Gorman, Ben Vereen, and introducing Erzsébet Fóldy, and not introducing John Lithgow. And spoilers to All That Jazz.
Spoilers. If you care that badly.
Yeah, if you care about the plot of All That Jazz. But what is the plot of this film, Natalie, if you don't mind?
Absolutely. I wouldn't mind at all. The synopsis goes maybe something like this, I'd say. Director and choreographer Joseph Gideon, a speed-abusing drinker and womanizer, directs a new Broadway play as he works to cut together his already behind-schedule film, all the while ignoring the signs of his failing health. As the women in his life press him to change his ways, Mr. Gideon cannot help but flirt with death herself.
Yes. Which, I think I had a note while at the end of the movie, because, well, right up front, I won't go specifically into why yet. I don't like this movie, and Natalie quite does. I think it's one of her favorite movies, actually. every time this is the second time I've watched All That Jazz, and I watched the Jessica Lange sequence, and I'm like, I literally have the thought of like, okay, who is this lady supposed to be? She looks very angelic. And then I get to the ending and it's sort of like, ah, she's death. And
but they name her character, you're right, Angelique is the name of her character. They don't name her death. I guess doing us maybe a more service than being like, on the nose, yeah. Do you get?
I can't describe it as on the nose. You're right. But it's definitely something that I was
the
like.
She's the angel of death.
Yeah.
I mean,
of
so
course.
She is death. But she's
yeah.
The angel.
It is an angel, though. But yeah. But, anyways, I guess why. Before I go into why I dislike this movie, because we usually let the person who likes the movie go first, I'd like to hear.
We're breaking format all over the place.
Yeah. Well.
Going rogue.
Why do you love this movie, I guess?
I love both the dancing in this movie and I love the dark tone slash imagery of the film. I really enjoy probably both the way that it feels like theater and film a lot. And I really enjoy the dance style, the dance sequences, in addition to enjoying just the main character, the Mr. Joseph Gideon, or Joe, inspired heavily, or based on the director and choreographer himself, Bob Fosse.
Very much so, it seems.
So it's,
yeah.
I enjoy the fact that it's a, to be nice maybe to the man, like a very talented director and choreographer who believe very much in free love. And as a character, you know, that he wrote in this movie, I think he says that faithful is small. Like the idea of like when she's like, you were never faithful. And he says, oh, why you gotta think so small? Like he has this grandiosity in his mind. And he's saying that about himself. And I enjoy, I guess, the as someone... not only, maybe it's because he was afraid of death and he was truly having those reflective thoughts of, wow, I really fucked this up.
Yeah.
And then you got to go back and maybe his willingness to show that. Because his character, you know, is, to speak nicely of Bob Fosse, even though this character is very much, you know, semi-biographical, you could definitely call this guy an asshole or a bastard.
The character himself?
He's selfish. Absolutely. He's very, I mean... He's talented, as they say, in his work life, but in his personal life, he is not. He is not maybe so successful in a long-term way. He's successful at the moment-to-moment. I like, just to like speak, there's a weird, as a woman, I don't like the idea of generally a womanizer who has commitments but then doesn't maintain the commitments. Like if you're going to be... open and just be open and honest and don't have the pretense of the marriage, of the girlfriend.
Just
and
say
that's
you
what
have
makes
open
it more like,
yeah.
But that's more maybe a modern slash too loose. I don't know.
Maybe in the 70s it wasn't quite that aspect of
but this movie
there.
Is definitely responsive, like the 60s free love and 70s.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
I think so. And that's how, but he is, I think, he's, it's interesting because he's definitely a product of like, classical, you know, 40s and 50s musicals, but also the drugs and the sex of the 60s,
yes.
You know?
Austin Powers.
The 70s.
Austin
and the
Powers
70s. It didn't stop in the 70s. It kept on going, yeah.
Just evolved into coke by the 70s, yeah.
But there's a nice scene, I think. It's so even though I would prefer this man maybe was nicer or at least more like honest with the women and what he wanted with that from them and
right.
with them, and maybe he is honest and some of them are okay,
right.
Never, you know, but generally I don't love the way that he seems to dispose of women or like pursue and then forget type of thing.
Yes.
Like, that's not always fun.
Yes.
To see happening to women.
I
they
definitely...
don't seem happy about it. Not all the women seem happy about it. But there is a scene in the third act where he, as he's wandering, going through his, you know, final throes, kind of, or just having a thing, I don't want to die. I'm going to just keep running away from this. He runs into a woman's room where she's suffering in the death throes.
Mm-hmm.
And she is
great moment.
Moaning. You know, she
in
looks
pain.
Like an older woman. Yeah, she's definitely in pain of some sort. And he comes in. And holds her face and says, you're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And he kisses her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, I'm like a little emotional because I think it's really beautiful. Because
it's a great moment.
It shows the power of intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And like a really good kiss, honestly. Like it looks like he gives her a really good kiss. and there's something about the power of romance and intimacy
mm-hmm.
that makes, and then in that moment it makes me like, well, damn, I can't hate him as much because maybe he did give something to those women in those moments, and like
there is something
about like the passing intimacy and like, you know, that comes with connecting and having like the sex even or just the kiss.
Well,
you know,
because it comes
it
from
wasn't
lust,
even sex, it's
right?
Just a kiss.
It comes from like a more just like I want to be with you physically. It's not like the committed
he,
thing, but
yeah.
It's like the physicality. So it's almost like how can you not, on some level, even though you might not feel supported in a committed relationship?
There are endorphins there. You know, there are benefits
and
at
you
the
feel,
moment.
What would you say? Like, not complimented, but you feel, like, recognition from another human being.
You're more alive.
Yeah, you know?
And
absolutely, in that moment.
It definitely doesn't last as the film shows, but maybe that in that moment, it made me be like, ah, oh, shit, is there something to this? Like, it's not... I prefer commitment, and I absolutely feel that with, I think in a committed relationship, one can have that feeling every time, you know, if you find the right person, of romance and of excitement, of feeling alive.
Yeah.
I think that's what everyone, I think, tries to, I don't know, people love it differently.
People love differently.
I shouldn't prescribe what people pursue. But I really like the darkness of the movie, not just the thing, like it's not the fact that there's death, yeah, sure, that's dark, but I just mean in, like, you know, you have the scene of the insurance auditors,
yes,
where while his heart is being openly, you know, fixed quite graphically, they're ripping out his heart, literally, his heart is out, and they're talking just about the money of the show. They don't care about the dance.
It's the cold data.
It's all about insurance, and what will I profit? And I love that. You know, it's so simple, but like I was responding viscerally to the visuals because I can't watch surgery very much.
I struggled with that sequence too, because I think it is a real surgery.
I also just love dance. I am not a professional dancer by any means. I'm more of a social dancer, but I think that dance is a very useful way to express oneself, and sometimes almost something that I feel compelled to do, and I think other dancers sometimes feel that as well. Or just maybe in the act, if you hear a good song and you want to move, there's something to that. And I think that even in the moment where he's like, oh, this music isn't very good, it's hard to dance to, I felt the same way. I'm like, oh shit, this would be hard to dance to.
Interesting.
And he does something, I think, with just playing with what, I don't know, what he wants to... But maybe it's too much of a sexual preference and what his, like, choreography would be. He doesn't want something that's too commercial and glossy. But he, at the same time, I was really noticing, like, his final staging was full of lights and refraction, which I took to mean partly that, like, so much of his life has been, like, sheen and performance and refracted light, like, just... Look over there. Look over there.
Interesting.
Because a lot of the scene, I mean, I think it's also just the black box staging that you get that effect.
Yeah.
I've been talking for a long time.
It's okay. No, I don't think you've been talking for a long time. I mean, I think that I do agree with you in a lot of ways, and I think that in your points of saying what you loved about it, you kind of mentioned several elements that I like about All That Jazz. But I think the first thing I'll state is that I'm not a dancer, so I don't immediately kind of have that connection to seeing dance. I've enjoyed dance movies before. We've connected about our love of the movie Flashdance. And I think maybe if I enjoyed the music more in All That Jazz, I might... So maybe I agree with Joe's character in that way, because I don't always engage with the music, nor do I really always... I can admire the dancing. I can, like, watch the dancing and see the technique and see that it comes from a very skilled place. But I guess maybe to go into my main reason why I don't like this movie... I don't know if I find Joe as a main character in the fact that the conflict of the movie mainly stems from me... Because it's pretty apparent, maybe it's only because I've seen this movie before, but it seems like it's pretty apparent up front that Joe is dying. And the other conflict of the story is that he really likes to sleep around with a lot of different women. And on that level, I don't engage with his character. And even though I admire the performance of Roy Scheider, it makes watching a lot of those dance scenes even more hard to connect with, because it's like, I don't like this main character, and now I don't really love the music of these scenes, nor can I connect with just dancing. And this movie, if you love dancing, I can understand loving All That Jazz, because it shoots and, like, cuts and just showcases dancing all over the place really, really well. But for me, Joe is just not a person who I enjoy being with. And I think... I don't mind that Joe is a bastard, But I don't engage with scenes where the conflict stems from him cheating on various women and some woman finding out that he's sleeping with someone else and being jealous with it. Like, that also is not a storyline that engages me all that much. I'm using that word a lot. But I understand why this got a lot of awards, because in my mind, it focuses on the world of entertainment, and as Dr. Jones would say, it belongs in a museum. This movie looks... It's shot...
I think it has been slightly museumized. One of the lovers, Library of Congress, said it had, like, cultural merit in terms of the time or something. Like,
I mean, I can understand that. I can definitely understand that. But I find a lot of the... And I can see how... What I mean by it belongs in the museum is, like, a lot of the ways... What you complimented about the film, actually. The camera work and the editing... I think it's interesting, but I also find it very distracting, and I also don't always know what the purpose of it is.
Did it win for editing, or was it just nominated that year for the Academy Award? Because it definitely... I mean, it was nominated, but did it win?
So it won for Best Art Direction, Set Decoration, it won for Best Costume, Film Editing, yeah, you're right, and Best Music. And I can understand why, because the editing is very bold. Like, you mentioned the sequence of just deciding to juxtapose the heart surgery with the cold kind of, like, insurance. Mm. I think that the editing is bold and interesting in this movie. I don't know if I totally... I mean, who am I to say? But I don't know if I totally love the editing, because I sometimes just find it distracting, and sometimes the visual metaphors for me... I bumped the table. Sometimes the visual metaphors for me just aren't connecting with me. As much as I think, because you mentioned, like, the dark tone of the film. Visually, it's just, it's wonderful for me to look at, because I agree with the Academy Award, definitely, for set decoration and production design. That's, like, the best, one of the best parts of the movie is just seeing the stage, seeing the behind the scenes, seeing all the various fantasy sequence stages. It's all very beautiful to look at, and I think that, as a person who in college spent a lot of time in theater, I can connect with a lot of this film on that level, of the level of especially auditioning and, like, that tragic feeling of not getting a role that you really, really want. Like, I can connect with a lot of those aspects of the movie. But that's not even really, honestly, the focus of the movie. The focus, for the most part, is Joe, his disease, the fact that he's a really great artist, but his life is just in shambles because he cannot ever have a cigarette out of his mouth. It doesn't matter if he's dancing. I think he has sex with a cigarette in his mouth.
I was anxious when he was dancing with the choreographer and they're, like, planking backwards together. I don't know what the official dance term is because I'm not a professional. But, like, he's, like, his cigarette was, like, right next to her ear. Ah, she was such a trooper.
It was just... He's sucking. He's, like, hoping for death. He's just sucking those sticks, just like, give me that death.
I should have also mentioned he's a chain smoker. I didn't mention that.
A constant chain smoker.
And drinking. He's a constant smoker.
There's only a few scenes that he doesn't have a cigarette in his mouth. But yeah, I guess that's kind of... That's kind of where me... And I, once again, I like Roy Scheider playing a bastard. I've gotten into movies with unlikable characters. He does. And... Unlikable characters in general, I can sometimes connect with, but it's the fact that really, and maybe I should let you speak, but just really quickly, because it popped in my head, I want to say, I think the storyline that I enjoy a lot is Joe with his daughter, which is played by, I'm going to fuck up her name again, Erzsébet Földi. She's great as an actress. I think she's really, really great in this movie. And I love the scenes whenever they're together. I love the whole dance sequence that Joe does with Katie and his daughter, Michelle. I think that's really cute and touching. And those are kind of the highlights for the movie for me. Not people dancing in the studios. Someone just... Another scene is, like, his ex-wife who's sort of, like, doing a dance number for him while she's kind of, like, having this...
That's a great scene in my mind. Like,
I agree.
That's a nice sequence because we learned so much that we didn't know before about the whole premise of why this stage play is even happening. It's kind of for her.
Yeah.
Like, it's really personal to both of them, kind of. It's not just another, you know, project. But...
I agree. And when it's kind of... When the story is engaging me with kind of the dance number, bumping this pen too much. I can sort of engage with it as well, because there's, like, And I love how, I can't remember the actress's name who plays his wife or his ex-wife. I'll look this up maybe later. But I do love her performance in that scene of kind of smiling and playing this performance of, like, I'm dancing, so I'm supposed to be smiling in this sequence. But she's sort of saying very stern, serious things to him. Like, this movie definitely... And once again, I've enjoyed movies in the past that juxtapose what you mentioned, the kind of...
Leland Palmer.
Thank you. The Wizard. Leland Palmer. I think her performance in that whole sequence where she's like dancing on a ladder alone and talking to Roy Schneider's character, Joe, is really, really good. And it's a nice, what you said earlier, it's a nice juxtaposition of this happy image with this kind of sad, depressing relationship between these two people. And those parts of the movie I really enjoy, but the bigger, larger dance sequences, especially once we get to the third act, don't really enjoy much of that at all. And I really just kind of wish this movie was more focused on the smaller, I guess, relationships of Joe's life than the bigger... And maybe that's just what Joe wants, because, like you said, about his perspective on cheating, it's about the bigger picture. Like, maybe he's just always about... the bigger picture, and that's what this movie is too. But I kind of wanted more between just his daughter and just the interrelationships of, like, the individuals that Joe is connected with. Because, yeah, like, the scenes with the producers, like, the insurance scene is a good one with the juxtaposed operation, but most of the scenes with the producer characters, I'm just kind of bored with them. Like, I think it's trying to be funny with them. I'm trying to think if there's any action. I don't think there's even any lines that those producers get, like, a laugh out of me. Yeah, no. I don't really think so. Like, they just kind of are just nothing characters. I mean, I get that that's the idea. They're just cold money people, but I don't know if I enjoy them that much either.
Yeah. I guess they're the villains in a way.
Yeah.
At least they represent the commercial. There's always that one producer who's just smiling. He loves everything. Mm-hmm. He's the kind of a yes man, but all he cares about is the money. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't really have any artistic opinion at all. Most of them, the producers, don't seem to have any care about the art. They just care about what they can sell. Mm-hmm. So I think they're just seen at least as the... I mean, maybe the villain is Joe himself, but they're definitely not...
No, I think...
They're not necessarily on the same side as the theater people.
I think you're right. By the end of the film, especially when Joe... But
you need money to put on a show. So, yeah. I mean, I'm not... I understand what it takes to be a producer, and you need to make profit, ideally, because you can't keep doing it otherwise.
Yeah. No, and I understand your point of just... I forgot my train of thought.
Sorry, babe.
It's okay. I think by the end... I think by the end, especially with, like, Joe's death kind of... Or, I'm sorry, Joe's imminent death kind of being a conflict for the producers directly, like, they definitely become the villains of the plot because they are not thinking of what's right for him. They're thinking, I guess, of what's right for the show, which maybe Joe ultimately wants as well, but it's definitely, like, a... Yeah, they're not... They're the antagonists to his life in that moment, it seems.
They won't fund what he wants to make. Sounds like his. Yeah. But also, as you and I both, I think, have a similar response to at least
the smoky flashlight dance sequence.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, when they strip down and it just becomes a strip club sequence. Because I know Chicago, there is a bit of like semi-toplessness. Like, mm-hmm. It was risque for the time.
Yeah.
But... I don't know how much nudity was being incorporated into Broadway. Like, I know art theater and dance, I think, can be performed, you know, pretty close to nude or nude, mm-hmm. and it can be beautiful. But that, as you mentioned, maybe it's more of a museum thing.
Yeah.
It's more of an installment performance thing.
It definitely seems much like that. Yeah.
Also, yeah, it also just reduces the number of people that you can sell tickets to, because you're not really supposed to have a kid come to a stage play where there would be nudity, and that limits the number of tickets you can sell.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a money thing. But I think it's a cool sequence about the human body.
I mean, there's a lot of sexy men and ladies in that sequence. It looks like an art piece dance sequence, but it is kind of...
It's no longer narrative, and it's definitely about free love.
Yeah.
Or definitely about just... about sex. It's about intimacy. It's about the human body.
Yeah. You
know, it's about all of that.
Yeah.
So definitely it's a, it doesn't fit, I think, what the producers want to fund. And that's where the villains. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think so. And I think that it's kind of one, another thing, I guess, that I don't really love about this movie is it's pretty upfront and apparent about kind of the fact that it's going to be about the steps of accepting death. Like, it kind of, I don't mind that part, but I sort of, it, they kind of showcase that scene in the stand-up that Joe is working on, which is very much seems like it's inspired by Lenny, which is an actual movie that Bob Fosse directed at one point. It seems that during that scene, it's very much setting up that the movie is going to try to visually present kind of this acceptance that Joe has of death. But once we get to that third act, and maybe this is a good way to go into that third act dance sequence, once we get into that kind of third act dance sequence where Joe is kind of on his deathbed and he is dying and it's this whole fantasy of him sort of accepting death, I don't know if the metaphor worked for me. I don't know if it very strongly ever felt like a good visual representation. I don't even remember the stages of death that they sort of like say in it. I just sort of remember the like rejection and I think acceptance is kind of what I remember. But I don't even remember what the list was because I don't think the visual representation of him accepting it was very great. Like, it was just a bunch of, and maybe, I don't know, maybe in, once again, a museum kind of art dance sequence, maybe it was the movement of the dance itself was supposed to represent those emotions, but I don't know if, I wanted, like, the movie kind of said, like, okay, we're gonna show you the acceptance, Joe accept, like, his death. And by the end of it, I don't know if I sort of feel like I accomplished that with that sequence in the third act.
I think that the dance sequences are him appealing to himself for why he should hold on to life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's running through both himself and also all of the people in his life trying to make an appeal. They're all appeals to him.
Mm-hmm.
Each dance is an appeal. But then some of them, he hears them still kind of shaming him. But some of them are love.
Mm.
But some of them are shaming.
Okay.
And I think it's the combination of hearing all those voices.
Okay, yeah.
But it is still coming from him because he is the director. So he's running through all these appeals for why he shouldn't die. But in the end, it, you know, he's choosing death. You know, whether or how much he's choosing death, it does seem like they try to lay down the idea that he thinks he is impervious or above or special, even though it is the actor, or not the, yeah, the actor who plays the comedian who says that to him multiple times. I agree with you that the comedian is probably way over inserted into the text.
Mm.
I don't know what who started it in the art world, but like the layering of voice, of like speech over other speech that, you know, you also hear in the Cell Block Tango in Chicago.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the Pop Six.
Mm.
Like all that part where you also see the voice layering in Bob Fosse, or sorry, in Bob Fosse did choreograph it, but in Joe's choreography. Oh, right. For when they're all saying their names in the flight sequence dance in the sexy part.
Yes.
of the choreography. Flashlight. In the smoky flashlight sequence, when they're all saying each other's names.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's just spoken, you know, like layering of speech again.
Mm.
I don't know who started that in like the theatrical world per se.
Mm.
I don't know, I'm losing my train of thought because I'm like, why don't I know that? Who is that?
The director of the movie Chicago? It's like
Ron. No. I mean, like, who, the idea of just having layering of people speaking over each other in a very artistic way, which you get more in this movie.
I'm sure it would be hard.
I guess I'm agreeing with you that the comedian is inserted. The recording of the comedian's diatribe about death is inserted a lot into the third act, and I actually don't enjoy how that's used because it's really annoying. We've heard it so many times at that point. It's not as powerful. And I understand why we watch it so many times and for so long in the movie because I think they're trying to make us feel what that feels like.
Yeah.
The tedium of it, the minuscule changes, the questioning of is this even any good?
Mm.
That type of feeling. But I don't really enjoy how they use the comedian speech. The five phases, the five stages, I think were anger, denial, bargaining, depression, and acceptance.
Okay.
And
so they're well-known steps. These are well-known steps.
Okay. I think that is like a theory about death now.
Okay.
All right. About the when one is dying, that one goes through those stages. But
and there is
I apologize.
No, I was just going to say there is something fascinating too. I do wonder, you know, because I don't know much about Bob Fosse. Most of what I know about him is from the movie Birdcage and the scene that we referenced with our intro. Fosse, Fosse, Fosse. Martha Graham, Martha Graham, Martha Graham. Like, that's kind of my exposure to the name Bob Fosse. Two of his movies, Sweet Charity and...
Cabaret,
thank you.
Liza Minnelli.
Sweet Charity and Cabaret were both shows that my Fairleigh Dickinson University, which was the college I went to for undergraduate school, are both shows I think the theater put on stage there, but I was not involved with those shows, so I was only familiar with Bob Fosse, the name, kind of in background reference. And I didn't realize watching this movie that, I mean, less than 10 years after he made this movie, he passed away, unfortunately. Rest in peace, Bob Fosse. He passed away in 1987. And I wonder... There is something fascinating, just not... I don't know if I love this movie, but from a behind-the-scenes perspective, there is something just fascinating to All That Jazz maybe being a meditation on life for him, and maybe that fact, maybe for him, in what he was expressing through dance and through a lot of the images, he was kind of working through, I don't know, maybe some fear of kind of like... that time coming. Because, I mean, obviously, he made another film. He made Star 80 4 years after All That Jazz. But I wonder if maybe it was just on his mind. And that part of this movie is fascinating. The fact that there is a movie that he's editing about a stand-up comedian, and he literally was editing a film called Lenny. Like, the autobiographical aspect of this movie relating to Bob Fosse's career is fascinating. But I don't know if I engage with the artistic kind of presentation of everything. Like, I think I find it gorgeous. I find a lot of the images to look at really, really beautiful, and this movie overall is just really beautiful to look at. But yeah, on a story level, I struggle because of the main character and because of the fact that I kind of want it to be more about the relationships of these people and less about the production, which is strange because I love theater production, once again. I worked in theater production in college.
He doesn't care about the relationships. He just cares about the production.
It's true. And this is his movie.
And this is his life.
Yeah.
So
it's all to a point. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. It's all definitely to a point.
I think that with in identifying that it's a personal project, and anyone I think who as a director has both writer and director clout with an established career behind you, your work I think can sometimes become maybe too long or too full or too much, and that's absolutely, I think a lot of artists or accomplished creators have maybe done that, whereas they go on, their work maybe gets longer or larger when it doesn't need to be, and there's a lot of excess maybe. But it's personal, and there are fewer people telling you maybe you shouldn't do that, or maybe you could do that a little more. Do we need the third shot? Do we need to hear the speech from the comedian again about the phases of dying? We understand.
Yeah, they cut in that speech like ten times.
The visuals also just of him wandering through the hospital are so powerful. Mm-hmm. I think of him.
Very upsetting.
What's the word? He's going through just like a type of weird, like I think euphoria or just delirium. Almost mania.
Yeah.
Delirium. Denial.
Maybe denial. Yeah, yeah.
But anything else during that sequence would have if it worked. That actor's annoying, like just tone. But otherwise, yeah, the tone is nice.
Cool.
The art in it is kind of weird. to me...
The art and set decoration, or do you mean like...
I guess you said the artist, like the artistic...
Yeah.
Attempt. I didn't love it when I was younger when I saw this film at first. I liked the dance, but I thought tonally I couldn't get through it. And now I think during, even though I know it is stretched and full, I enjoy the metaphor or the, you know, the content enough and the dancing enough to not mind. But I think that I, in looking this up, I know we don't really do reviews too much from other people, just like, before we review anything, we don't. So afterwards I saw on the wiki, one of the negative reviews, their main issue was that the overall experience is nice, but the third act ruins it.
Huh.
That it's they think that they called it something like you have to endure it. You know, they said it was essentially too long.
Yeah.
And it is a very long experience of him dying, and he's still dying. And
I mean, really, for me, a lot of momentum is lost once he gets to the hospital, and it just becomes... And I mean, from a script perspective, it becomes just about him at the hospital, but it's just... That's where it really loses a lot of momentum for me. Mm-hmm. And then the dance sequence doesn't help. I honestly think, I guess, one of the negatives for me is tonally, I really only think this movie is doing one thing, which is kind of the happy image juxtaposed with sad characters. And I just, after a while, I don't really know if it's doing much else for me other than that. Like, and the metaphor doesn't really... It doesn't rain strongly for me, I guess, visually. But I think that there's a lot to admire about what's going on in the artistic design of everything, so I can imagine interpreting that from it, definitely.
When you mean happy image, what do you...
Well, I mean that usually, like, you know, dancing in and of itself is a pretty happy thing to watch. Like, it's very, like, joyous. People are moving in a very joyous form, but at the same time, like, the scene where, I guess, maybe it's Victoria, he's sort of, like, yelling at Victoria to, like, lift her leg higher, like... It's sort of like, I don't see the difference between when she did it badly and when she did it good. So I just sort of see people dancing, but at the same time they're like yelling and mad at each other because he's like, why aren't you doing this correctly? So like, I guess that's a little more of an obvious like.
I think example. His style is based on angles and tight, because even in the end sequence we see a lot more of the ballet.
Mm-hmm.
But his is definitely like that jazz ballet. In ballet, you absolutely have to have like the straightest leg possible.
Mm.
I took ballet for a few years as a kid, but I...
It's like a Whiplash movie in that sense. It's like very like, get this right!
Yeah, and I think, and it was like that. It was very strict, very strict.
Yeah.
Your hair had to be back tight enough. Your stomach couldn't stick out. If your stomach stuck out, a woman would come and, quote-unquote, eat your stomach and go om nom nom in front of everyone.
With your fingers?
Yeah.
For the podcast. Natalie
she would come and touch your stomach.
Made mouths with her hands.
She would come and touch your stomach in front of everyone. It happened to me once, and I am not... I mean, that's got to be effed up for people, because I am not
that sounds
a woman. Like, I don't know. I think that's fucked up. I don't think that's healthy. I wouldn't do that. I don't think I would be like abdominal strength. It's about muscles. It's not about like, I don't know. They were, yeah, it wasn't, I don't know. I thought it wasn't supportive enough in that way.
Yeah. 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 That seems very, I wouldn't like that at all. That seems very mean, but yeah, it seems like the dance world overall is a pretty shallow,
possibly a pretty shallow and mean world. At the same time, they were good teachers. Ballet is beautiful.
Yeah.
But I think, if you can just make it more about strength. And I think a lot of it is now more about that.
Mm.
I also just was a lazy kid. Or just, I didn't want to put in weekends all the time. I liked my Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, I understand.
And it became a thing where they wanted it Saturday morning cartoons. And I was afraid, I think, of the big performance coming up. So I sort of, I think, was like, I sprained my ankle once. I'm done. Like, that's why I wanted. I just wanted to watch cartoons, really, and do other things. And I did other things. I wasn't just doing nothing.
No, I mean, you don't have to... Natalie was such a lazy child. but yeah, I mean, that's kind of... I can definitely see your love for this movie. There's just a lot of sequences that I just struggle to connect with. And the main one, I guess, that is kind of... I guess it's not the main visual metaphor. But just Jessica Lange as Death. I don't know if I said this yet, but Jessica Lange as Death and Joe interacting with each other never works for me. It always just feels, and Bob Fosse is a very theatrical person, it feels like a a play that I just don't really like. It feels like a black box theater like play that I would not enjoy seeing, like whenever I'm with Jessica Lange and Roy Schneider together. And it's like, because it just seems like the conversations between them don't for me add anything. They don't add anything else, and if you cut them out entirely, I don't even think, I think the movie would possibly even be stronger if you cut out the Jessica Lange, like, him sequences entirely, because I don't really know what they don't really add anything for me, I guess. That's my opinion, but I can understand someone having strong thoughts against
it. I do think there are too many of those. Uh-huh. The ones with his mother, where she's literally there after he has described her, is a bit much, because then we get the actual scenes of him as a child in the club, and we could have just had... maybe somehow his mother there, I don't know. Or just, we didn't need to see the mother. It was just another added thing. But I do think that the black box at the time was still newer than what we're used to, too.
Okay.
As an artistic option.
That's true. I guess that's true. Yeah, you know, you're that's a good
Beckett
point.
Beckett was still
point.
Relatively theater of the absurd, surrealism. I'm trying to think of what the black box theater is associated with the most. It's definitely another term, but that like stark post-war cold response, I guess we even had it at the turn of the century. Like, we'd had it for a hot minute after we, yeah.
I would honestly have no idea, but that's fascinating. No, I don't know the origin of that at all, but I guess you're right to point out that maybe I'm being a little, maybe the fact that I've been exposed to theater and sort of like that kind of black box theater, I guess it's sort of like more minimalistic kind of set design in all the sequences between him and death. I do actually, I will say just really quickly, I like when he dies and goes and visits the Angel of Death, and he's kind of walking down. It looks like the walkway above
the stage.
He's like floating above the stage on that like walkway with all the lights. But you're right, he's floating. He's like on like a literal Evil Dead platform, and they're just kind of like walking.
He's going towards the light. He's going towards the light. Yeah.
I don't remember the greater point, but yeah, I don't know if I do remember the greater point. I may be taking for granted the fact that now in 2022, black box theater is something we're all very familiar with, and it was very new to probably see to people in 1979 and all that jazz.
I think it was also a choice because he wanted to show this sort of behind the scenes feeling, you know, because it makes it feel more like a warehouse or a soundstage. But also, it does feel a bit like theater because there were stages within the black.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's all just trying to convey like this feeling of emptiness.
Yeah, yeah.
This feeling of falseness.
Yeah.
More of, yeah, just trying to say like performance is... I think he's trying to get like a hollow feeling. I think Terry Gilliam also does similar things with his staging. And I think it all comes from maybe the theater of the surreal or that that mindset that we... got after just
yeah. Surreal is definitely something that pops into my head for a lot of like the fantasy sequences, especially. And it's ironic because I'd probably give this movie a 4 out of 10, and it's ironic. I actually gave the same rating to The Lighthouse, which was the episode Isaac and I covered on our first episode. And I feel similarly but different about those two films, All That Jazz and The Lighthouse, in a sense, because All That Jazz I admire artistically. There's a lot to admire about the design of it. And the story I don't engage with, which is something that definitely I felt like with Lighthouse. Although the problem really is for me the main character in this movie. And so that's a big issue, I enjoy the performance.
How would you say you feel about the visual language? Because we agree that sometimes we don't like the editing, but what do you mean just... How do you feel about the emotionality sometimes of the visual language?
Sometimes I think that the editing is a little jarring for me, even though once again it won an Oscar, so what am I saying? Sometimes the editing can be a little distracting for me. The camera work, not at all. I think the cinematography, along with the design, is really beautiful. And I think that the framing of everything, when the camera stays on something for a long period of time, it's really compelling. And there's like, I'm trying to think of...
They shoot the dancing really well, in my mind.
They
you
shoot
get both
the dancing
the
really
wide,
well.
The facial,
absolutely, absolutely.
You get, yeah, he chooses his moments really well.
No, it's more, honestly, and maybe I haven't mentioned this yet, it's more the montage of nature of this movie. This movie really... It has montage sequences. I don't really like. I get what it's doing. Like Roy Schneider, the point of it
is
his performance.
Perhaps too much too often.
Too often, I think. If it were I think that Roy Schneider, like, he's changing his performance over time, so the fascinating aspect of it is his performance, but yeah, it gets a little tired for me. And overall, like, between the dance numbers, when people are just kind of moving from place to place, it just feels like, I don't know, maybe this is a bad way to describe it, it just feels like the editing is constantly a montage-y nature, unless it's a dance sequence or it's just two people kind of in one place talking to each other for like a long dialogue scene, and then the camera's not doing anything because you're just listening to those two people. So the camera work I actually think is quite good, but it's sometimes the cutting that I think distracts
me. I think maybe what you're... The film definitely feels more like a theater production in pace than a movie. That was actually something I think I might have
observed.
Is that it definitely, if this were a play,
as if it's moving set pieces,
you would have dialogue as things were changing, and then it would be there, and you're in a set.
Okay,
and
I can see
just
that.
Something, and it doesn't change, and then there's change, and there's change.
Okay,
I think that's why. Well, but again, it doesn't always work. I understand the pacing does feel weird.
But I can understand connecting with that. That's interesting. I didn't think of
that. I don't think I liked the pacing or felt like that was maybe why that existed for a while.
Uh-huh.
That was just more of a recent thing. I was like, maybe it was intentional. Or just maybe it was just because of how he paces his stories.
But that's interesting. Maybe I'm not giving enough credit to that in the cutting style as well. Okay, cool. And once again, this movie got an Oscar for Best Film Editing, so what do I know?
I do want to say, too, people at the time loved this, and I think that is why it was, what is it? The
very well received. Congress. Hugely well received. Mm-hmm. You are definitely on the side of the majority. I think I'm in the minority of not liking this movie.
But I don't know, you know, not everything ages as well as other things.
True.
I think you said this might be the oldest film yet you guys have covered, and we got to change that.
It is. We got to keep watching. We did The Shining. I don't remember which episode, but we covered The Shining, and now, that was 1981. Or 1980, sorry.
Oh, good movie. Oh, speaking of Kubrick, there's a thing on the wiki for this movie. It is a reported response, but upon seeing the movie in 1979, Kubrick supposedly said... He supposedly called it the best film I think I have ever seen.
Wow. Oh, my
Casual.
God.
Casual. Casual.
Well, fuck me. Yeah, I guess I disagree with Kubrick.
I mean, think about how he makes his films. Long takes. Long sequences.
Yeah.
Artistic.
So I'm an idiot. I'm definitely wrong, I guess.
I just reportedly. It's only on a week. I mean, we love Wikipedia. Thank you, Wikipedia. We need to donate to Wikipedia, everybody.
This movie was released in 1979, but I will say it premiered at Cannes. In 1980. So, like, it came out in theaters, and then people thought it was so good that the next year they're like, okay, we'll screen this. So it came out almost, like, you could argue it basically came out around the same time as The Shining, because I think The Shining came out May of 1980, and that was the premiere at Cannes.
What a time.
So I don't know if that's when it got really huge. Its box office, it wasn't a huge success. It was a success, but it wasn't, like, a huge runaway, like, box office master, or, like, what do you call it? Box office, I don't know.
It
made about 37 million. $37 million. So I mean, I think it cost $12 million. So I think they basically made back their profits, and the minimalistic sets probably helped that. And shooting a lot of, it looked like New York. I assumed it was New York that they were shooting a lot of. It was
Broadway.
Fun to see. Yeah, it was fun to see the streets. And
it was
stuff
believably
like that.
Broadway. Who knows where that theater? The theater could have been in L.A., but he's a New York man.
Yeah,
so they probably had those connections.
Yeah. But maybe moving on to the actors on this project, Roy Schneider, rest in peace, first of all, Roy Schneider passed away in 2008, but I guess we already kind of, before this podcast we started going, we talked about Jaws is probably the most, we both know of Roy Schneider, even though he's been acting since the 50s, it looks like a lot of television and films in the 60s and stuff, he was in The French Connection.
Yes,
is it a big role, do you remember?
I've never seen The French.
I have, and I don't even remember if it's a huge role.
My family,
he might be like the co-lead or something.
My parents weren't a fan, so
he was
like
co-lead. Never mind. He was a big role in that. Okay, so the French Connection must have been big for him. But yeah, I mean, Jaws is...
Prior to that, he was in TV a lot,
What did you say? Yeah, TV a lot. Yeah. But Jaws is a huge, huge film. I love Jaws, and I love his performance in it. Speaking of Kubrick, he was in the sequel to 2001, A Space Odyssey. He was in 2010, The Year We Make Contact, which I still have not seen. Kubrick didn't direct that. Okay. I don't remember who directed that. I'm going to look this up right now. Just because I want to know.
You like
Peter Hyams? Peter Hyams? Interesting. Okay. Peter Hyams directed that. It's on HBO. Maybe I'll watch that at some point. But yeah, I don't know. Beyond Jaws, really, I'm not super familiar with his career looking, and that's a lot of these. I mean, this movie was made in 1979, and I am much more familiar kind of with more recent films, I would say. Mm-hmm. Looks like he was in The Punisher as Frank Castle's dad, I don't think that was a very big role for him. Mm-hmm. It's not a huge billing. But yeah, I guess that's all. For Roy Scheider, he was nominated for 2 Oscars, one for All That Jazz and the other for The French Connection. And I definitely think he probably should have. I would assume that Dustin Hoffman won for Kramer versus Kramer because that was the thing that won Best Picture, maybe even Best Director. I'm not positive on that. But I don't know. I kind of think Roy Scheider's performance in All That Jazz is really compelling. I kind of think that's one of the things I really love about the movie, in addition to the design, is I enjoy his performance while not liking the writing behind his character. So it's fascinating to watch. But like, he as a bastard, it's fascinating to watch. He's really good at it. Who did win for Best Director?
Kramer vs. Kramer.
And yeah, it was Kramer versus Kramer, Robert Benton, who won for Best Director that year. Not All That Jazz. And I guess, I don't know, I've seen Kramer versus Kramer. Have you seen it? I'm not a big...
Actually, no.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not... Yeah, it's...
This is embarrassing. All my movie blind spots are coming up here.
It's okay.
I'm not going to rush to watch The French Connection. It's okay. Sorry.
I mean, hey, then... car chases are great. The French Connection, it's
maybe
worth
I'll
watching
just watch
once.
The car sequences
it's worth watching
on the
once.
Internet.
I think it's worth watching once.
Okay.
It's one we'll check out once. Jessica Lange, she, of course, American Horror Story is kind of the thing that first pops into my head. What's the thing that pops into your head for
American Horror Story? Okay. I watched several seasons of that. Not the more recent ones, but the earlier ones. Oh, she's great.
She's so great in those things. Academy Award winner, I should have said, Jessica Lange. She won for Tootsie, which is a movie I don't enjoy, but she is great in it. Yeah, she is great in it. And then 1994's Blue Sky, which I never saw. Another actress. Yeah, so don't worry, because my actor and actress blind spots are popping up now, too. I'm not super familiar with her other than... She like pops up in Big Fish, and of course, yeah, I've seen a few episodes of her in American Horror Story, and 1976's King Kong is her big breakout role.
Right, yes.
But I never saw that either. Cape Fear I saw her in, though. She's really, really great in Cape Fear. That's just an uncomfortable fucking movie to watch the whole time, but great movie, Cape Fear.
I didn't finish it. I fell asleep. I feel terrible. I can sleep anywhere, though. That's a talent of mine.
You know, it has really relaxing music. It's very just, like, ominous, but also I can understand kind of falling asleep to it. It's very, like, relaxing music. But yeah, she is still very much an actress now. More recently, it seems like television is her big thing with The Politician and American Horror Story. Those are two really big shows for her. I guess The Politician actually was just one season. I apologize. But her American Horror Story, she was in for 53 episodes. So that's a big, big role for her. And in terms of my familiarity with the actors and actresses in this movie, beyond that, really, I guess John Lithgow is definitely a man that I'm super familiar with. It's strange. Every time I've seen this movie, like the first time I saw All That Jazz, I was just like, fucking John Lithgow just suddenly in the third act of this movie. And I completely forgot he was in it for the second viewing and had this same reaction again. I'm just like, fucking John Lithgow all of a sudden.
As it, when I saw this, I had only seen him in Third Rock from the Sun. So seeing him with hair as an as a schmarmy guy,
yeah,
was uncomfortable for me. I was just...
He's great at playing a schmarmy guy, he's though. Great. Oh, especially he's great. More recently, like in movies like Bombshell. Have you seen Bombshell?
I haven't seen Bombshell.
We need to watch Bombshell. I'm surprised we didn't watch that together, but we definitely need to watch. I think that might have been, sad to say, might have been an airplane watch for me, so I need to give that a real watch, as some people would think. But yeah, he's really good at kind of playing that schwarmy bastard. He's also, I guess, okay at playing kind of the avuncular parent figure in, what is it, Interstellar? He's in, like, the first act of that, because, of course, that movie jumps into the future. He deserved better,
but yeah.
I do remember him being... I saw bits and pieces of Daddy's Home, too, and he's the father of Will Ferrell in that.
Oh, I want to see that.
Is he in the first one, just too? Because of I think him. He's just in the second one. I saw bits and pieces of that, and he's really funny in that movie. I don't know if I love that movie all that much. Okay. But yeah, it looks like plays schmarmy, almost like men involved with politics a lot. He was in The Campaign as well, which was not a movie that I enjoyed. Oh. But his performance is always great. But yeah, it really does go back to Third Rock from the Sun. I think that show is just... so fucking funny. It's so good. Watched so much of it as a kid.
Yeah.
I think now when I go back to it, I'm so, like, I constantly, it makes me just, I'm so familiar with the show that it's hard for me to watch Third Rock from the Sun now and not to just be familiar with all the episodes.
Because Yeah, Big Giant Head. It's hard to see Joseph Gordon-Levitt as a big, strong man sometimes because I just... with that long hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's really... it's a really early great role for him. We'd be remiss not to mention things like Cliffhanger and Pelican Brief, although it's been years since I've seen Cliffhanger. Yeah. But he's the big... spoilers to Cliffhanger. He's the big villain in Cliffhanger, from what I remember of seeing that movie. Oh, right, and Harry and the Hendersons. Man, John Lithgow's a legend. Yes, I totally forgot about Harry and the Hendersons.
What are we doing
Oh,
here?
My gosh.
And
oh,
he's
my
in
gosh.
Footloose.
He is just, wow.
In terms of endearment.
Wow, okay. I'm blown away by this. I'm, like, totally forgetting all these, like, roles right now. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of, like, being overwhelmed. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. It definitely...
Twilight's on the movie! Yep. Twilight's on the movie.
Yep, I know. Well, is that the movie that we don't talk about? That's the movie we don't talk about or watch. But... John Lithgow really just exploded in the 80s. Terms of Endearment, Twilight Zone, the movie. Mm-hmm. He was also in... the sequel to 2001 Space Odyssey, 2010, The Year We Made Contact. He just kind of broke out then and has been just a consistent, strong, supporting actor in films for a long, long time. What were you going to say?
I don't remember because I was looking at you and...
I'm sorry.
I was thinking, yes, he is a really good, strong, supporting actor. why was I being so attentive? That's okay.
It can happen
two
sometimes.
In the moment.
But yeah, well, and Oscar also, I guess we'll mention, John Lithgow was nominated for Terms of Endearment and The World According to Garp. So Oscar nominee, John Lithgow, forgot to state up front. A lot of
Oscar nominee.
Very talented people in this film. Dancers and actresses and designers alike.
The next actress I think I'd like to shout out, if it's okay.
Yeah.
Well, actress and dancer is... Anne Rankin.
Uh-huh, okay. Yeah, I'm not at all really familiar with her.
I haven't unfortunately seen any of her other work as well, but she was in the film production of Annie in 1982.
Oh, whoa.
And she does have quite a career as a Broadway dancer.
That makes sense.
Yeah, she...
Okay, that makes sense.
There are some great just pictures of her as a young dancer. Like, she was amazing. I love her. I love Anne Rankin. I love her dancing in this movie. She is such a good dancer.
She's really good. As a performance, I think she's really good, too. I forgot to mention up front. But, yeah, she plays Katie, right? Yeah,
Katie.
She's great. No, I think she's really, really, really good in this movie. And a lot of her... She's just really authentic and genuine. Yeah, no, a lot of her performance is very touching.
I will say about this production that I think she nails it. But it is... Afterwards, only recently in doing research for this episode, did I learn that she was one of only as it describes, she was one of Bob Fosse's partners at the time.
Oh,
and
at the time of making this
she's
movie.
Essentially playing herself, but she was still asked to audition for the part, even though you're effing playing yourself. Please audition for me. Prove you can play yourself to me, woman I have been in bed with multiple times. She wow. is, but I think maybe it is just
asshole-y
that
on-screen
it is that maybe
screen,
that
maybe.
Career drive of he is such a good artist and True. She is such a good dancer.
He's just career driven, yeah.
It's, you know, yeah, it's what, I don't know, they're amazing artists.
Yeah.
It's a great, I love this.
That's unarguable. This, Bob Fosse is an amazing artist and she is as well. Absolutely, you know, absolutely.
Mr.
I haven't
King,
seen
beautiful.
I haven't seen Anne Rankin in anything else other than this. I haven't seen Annie.
She's on The Cosby Show in 1987 as well.
Which is
she more recently did a podcast.
Good for her. Unfortunate for other reasons, but good for her.
Yeah.
Leland Palmer, who plays Joe's ex-wife, also not a lot of acting credits, so maybe also she is a more of a stage actress. I'm not sure, though, but on IMDb, which is what I usually use to cheat when we look up these actors, on IMDb it doesn't really list much else, but I'm wondering, she was in an episode of Police Story. I don't know if I saw Nightmare on a Monday Morning, but Police Story is a great, really funny fucking show that you can watch a few episodes on mm-hmm. for free on YouTube, so maybe check that out to see her. She plays a character named Janice on Nightmare on a Sunday Morning, 1977 episode of Police Story, but other than that, can't say I'm familiar with a lot of these other...
She was on an episode of Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, okay. Laverne and Shirley. That's...
But yeah, she's absolutely a, yeah, also a stage dancer.
Seems like it, but great performance in this mm-hmm. film. I actually think, once again, I mm-hmm. actually, like all these actresses, maybe that's the reason why Bob Fosse is possibly working with more stage actresses in this, because they convince me that they're stage actresses and they're working yeah. behind the scenes, so they're very good, they're
you
very
engaging. You
can't
fake someone who's been a dancer their whole life. It's
true.
It's very difficult, even though, you know, props to the men and women who come in and try, you know, train for...
Yeah.
However many months, but you can't, someone who's been a dancer from birth, you just can't replicate that.
Yep.
Your body is trained.
And that's why La La Land sucks.
Watch Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire, people.
Isaac can't be here to defend it, but Isaac defends La La Land, I guess. Go listen to that episode.
The dancing could have been better.
I'll talk for him. I'm sure he would defend it. Cliff Gorman, who plays the stand-up comedian in the kind of fake, what would you say, film that Joe is directing and editing, called The Stand-Up, that kind of seems like it's based on actual production of Lenny, which is a movie Bob Fosse made. Not at all familiar, really, with this actor.
I do want to see Ghost Dog, still haven't seen it.
With this
I'm
actor.
Blind.
Apologize. Ghost Dog? Ghost
Way
Dog,
the
Way of the Samurai?
Mm-hmm.
What the hell is Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai? Interesting.
It's a Forrest Whitaker film?
Jim Jarmusch, Forrest Whitaker movie.
Mm-hmm.
Samurai old. Okay.
I was 9, you were 10.
A man who models himself after the samurai of old finds himself targeted for death by the mob. All right. Okay, I'll check that out. That is one of his most well-known roles, so maybe he's like a villain character or something.
Yeah,
let's watch that. Let's do it. All right, we're going to check out Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. But he's an actor who's worked consistently since the 1966 in television and film. He worked in 1998 on a bunch of episodes of Law and Order. He's been in episodes of Murder, She Wrote. So he is just... hardworking actor. Not very familiar with him. Are you at all familiar with Cliff Gorman outside of all that jazz?
I hate to say no, looking at the list.
He's in a Friday the 13th television series, though. That's interesting. You do like those movies.
Movies. I haven't watched the television series.
Oh, also in a bunch of episodes of Police Story. A couple episodes of Police Story popping up on this.
Sounds like we need to rewatch Police Story.
It sounds like we got to rewatch Police Story. You're absolutely right. But yeah, unfortunately.
He's a great TV actor from the 70s.
Looks like a lot of
and 80s.
Consistently TV supporting actor or just TV actor. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess because one of the last actors on the cast list, just to be in sort of like the initial closing cast, Ben Vereen, who plays kind of, he's great, but definitely seems like he might be a person who's more of a stage performer. Although I'm totally wrong. No, he's definitely an actor who's been working hard. He's in a TV series recently called Eight Positive. He's great in this movie as like that
Be positive. I am closer.
Apparently I need new glasses. Be positive makes sense. Why would eight positive be the thing? He's really great. He plays like that showmany guy who kind of narrates or is like dances with Joe when he's accepting death, that whole fantasy sequence, right? That's this character.
Yeah, he is the host. He is the recurring host on TV, and then he becomes the host of his of his death fantasy, of his final sequence.
Mm-hmm. Also was in the series Roots back in the 70s, which was a really big series.
He was on an episode of The Nanny and The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Nice. Jamie Foxx show. I love him. Oz.
Not super familiar with him, but yeah, he's worked a lot. Another actor who seems to be working a lot in television. I think I saw... Yeah, he was in Top 5, which is a movie that got
super versatile.
Yeah,
comedy very versatile. And serious. Like Law & Order, How I Met Your Mother.
And cool that it looks like his first role listed on IMDb was in... Was in Sweet Charity. So interestingly enough, he worked as just a dancer early on with Bob Fosse in that movie, and
Shirley MacLaine
got a much cooler role, it seems, in Shirley MacLaine, you're saying? Oh, is she was in Sweet Charity? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never seen the movie. 1960.
I've just watched the dance sequences out of it. I haven't watched the narrative
for. Interesting. But yeah, another hardworking actor that I just wanted to shout out. Sneaky Pete definitely is something to shout out that I know a lot of people enjoy that show. Haven't watched much of it. The Good Fight, and yeah, Be Positive.
Ooh, he's in a new project called The Midas Touch. That just sounds like a cool project.
That does sound like a cool project. Just because of Trust the Midas Touch, just because of the commercial.
Yeah, because a man who can turn items to gold just by touching them isn't cool enough as an origin.
Do you know what's funny though? I'm such a terrible individual that I totally forgot that's what that word meant. I just associated with the commercial.
They've got you.
Oh, American advertising. Shout out once again, although we already shouted out Erzsébet Foldy, she didn't really act in anything else after All That Jazz, but I think she's actually pretty darn good in All That Jazz.
Yeah,
so
like
good performance as Joe's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess I don't know, I guess I've kind of said my place on this film. I think the only other thing maybe that I'll mention, because I've already said kind of what I didn't like about this movie, the one thing I do enjoy is it has a couple of really dark comedic moments that really get me to laugh out loud pretty hard, and one of them is when Joe is being inspected and he has a cigarette in his mouth as he's being inspected, and the doctor who is inspecting him is basically also smoking a cigarette, and there everyone in the room is just like coughing up a lung as they're like going through a physical examination in a doctor's office, and it's really, really fucking hysterical because it keeps going and they just get like it just becomes even more obnoxious, and it's really, there's a couple of just dark comedic moments of this film that are really funny, and I'll say that to the movie's good side of what I enjoyed about it. I enjoyed some things in this movie.
I find it funny too. I'm so glad. It could be funnier though. I think at one point he says that Joe Gideon refers to himself as a man known for, what was it, theatrical comedy or, you know, musical comedy. And I didn't find it funny enough to call it a comedy. I find it more biting.
Definitely. I don't find it overall comedic. It's mostly like...
Or absurd, you know? Yeah. Like it's commenting, but I love the dancing. I wanted also just to shout out in the sequence where Katie and Michelle, his Joe's daughter and girlfriend, have prepared a dance for him,
mm-hmm.
and they perform it for him at his apartment.
Love that
because
scene.
His film has premiered, and yeah, their dancing and their choreography is both impressive and charming. There's a sequence where Michelle bends her body to become a piano and Katie plays piano on her stomach, and it's so cool.
That's really cute. I agree. It's a nice sequence.
Bob Fosse has made a big impact on modern dance.
Mm-hmm.
I think arguably you wouldn't have Lady Gaga's style Lady Gaga is definitely doing things that are similar to like the frog and those other minute motions that, you know, she does. She's the jazz dance and like the Bob Fosse, I think hip movements are very much, I think, a part of what she does.
Okay. For those listening, Natalie pantomimed some monster claws with some dance moves for me. I mean, once again, the Birdcage mentions him by name, and in like a sequence where Robin Williams, the great rest in peace, great Robin Williams, he's kind of going through a bunch of, because this, like, he's sort of, what did you call it? He's chiding this young dancer who's kind of being all over the place with his performance. And like he's frustrated, the young dancer's frustrated because he wants to express himself more. And Robin Williams is like, well, you can express yourself. You can be Fosse, 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 Fosse. You can be Martha Graham, Martha Graham. You can be Twyla, Twyla, Madonna, Madonna. And he goes through also, because Robin Williams was a great physical actor and was trained by great, I think he went to the Juilliard School, which is very much about dance and body language as well. He goes through the history of like, yeah, so is Gaga. Yeah, yeah. No, he goes through the history. She went to Juilliard?
I thought she did.
I thought she went to NYU.
We'll have to look
I don't
this
fucking
up.
Know. it's okay. This isn't a Gaga episode. Robin Williams in The Birdcage goes through like the history or like the evolution of recent dance and mentions Fosse by name. So even though I'm not familiar at all with Bob Fosse, I can recognize just the influence he's had.
She was accepted into Juilliard, but went to a different school.
Interesting.
I had that wrong.
Interesting.
Wait. Oh, of course, the website is being funny.
She might be a little too, maybe she's a little too camp for Juilliard. No, I'm just kidding.
You were right. She attended NYU Tisch, but she dropped out after a year.
I did. I remember that she dropped out. Right. Yeah.
I'm learning all the things.
Me too.
No, I'm learning. Learn something new every day, people. It's important.
Especially on this podcast. That's why you guys come here. To pick your
learning.
And so with that, Natalie.
Yes.
I think it's time to play a little Kevin Bacon game.
Oh, no.
So for our uninitiated, even though I'm sure you're familiar with this, this is your first time on the show, so I'll introduce the Kevin Bacon game. Kevin Bacon game is our version of the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, which is a game that purports that any actor can be connected to the actor Kevin Bacon through the acting roles that they've played in the movies that they've been in. And we've created our own version of this game on the show where we've created a never-ending chain. Where now we're actually just sort of, I'm screwing up and
you're connecting
this.
An actor from the previous episode's movie to an actor from this episode's movie.
Yes,
all that jazz.
Thank you. In the style of the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, and of course, if we are able to use Kevin Bacon as one of the actors to make the link in this episode, then there is a bell that will ring. If we are able to do that. So this week we'll be connecting the actors of All That Jazz to the actors of
F9. The Nine.
The Fast Song.
These movies have so much in common. So much in common. It's
really great to just think about it that way. All right, but I guess since you're the guest, why don't you challenge me first? I'll go first. What would you like to challenge me to?
Alrighty.
And here I have the lists. I'll bring up the cast list of F9 for you. Here we go. So we can look at this. And you can just see. Let's not make this too difficult.
Okay, well, I'm trying to still decide which actor from this movie is the least cruel to give you. Because I made you watch this film, so I figure I should give you not the hardest option.
I mean, I would honestly, John Ratzenberger, who's also kind of plays an insurance agent in this movie, I believe. I'd go with him from All That Jazz. Where is he? He's like, let me just see. Well, oh, I'm sorry. Wow, I confused him for another actor from fucking Toy Story. That's why. I apologize to Wallace Shawn. Wallace Shawn is also in this movie, who we didn't talk about because he basically just plays an assistant insurance man who has one line of dialogue, but obviously, Wallace Shawn is a legend. So, I mean, we could do that. I would say he's well-known. John Lithgow, Jessica Lange, Roy Schneider, all those people I would say are acceptable.
Already. then I'll just start saying names. How about, can you connect Roy Schneider to... I almost want to change it up and say Michelle Rodriguez.
Michelle Rodriguez. Oh, shit. Okay. So Michelle Rodriguez, a lot of things, but I think I'll definitely need to start with Roy Schneider to get me out of the 70s, because really it's just Jaws that I can think of for him. And Jaws doesn't have a lot of other people in it. It has... Who's the other big name in Jaws that I can't think of? Curly-haired guy who's also in Close Encounters.
Oh, him. I was going to go with Robert.
Oh, Robert Shaw. You're right. Robert Shaw is also in that. No, that's probably... Let me try Robert Shaw.
Although this is gonna be difficult. Get your ass over the sting.
Wait. Okay. You're right. Get our ass over to the sting. You're absolutely right. So Roy Schneider was in Jaws with Robert Shaw. I apologize.
Shout out David Ward.
Do we want to? I don't know. Shout out David Ward.
Writer. Academy Award winning writer.
We've mentioned David Ward on this podcast, who is an Academy Award winning screenwriter of The Sting, and also Natalie and I. The reason why she brought him up is because we studied with him at Chapman University, which is the grad school we attended and met at. So, sorry. A little break from the Kevin Bacon game for that. Not sorry. There you go.
Not sorry.
David S. Ward is an amazing
man. He's earned it.
Yeah. Fucking Roan directed down Periscope. No, I think he might have only directed down Periscope, but it's a great fucking legend. Roy Schneider's in Jaws with Robert Shaw, who's in The Sting with, why can't I think of actors right now, blonde-haired guy, Robert Redford. Thank you. And Robert Redford, because of the fact that he's been in things like Captain America, The Winter Soldier, that's got to be a way I can get to Michelle Rodriguez. So who is in The Winter Soldier that could possibly get me to Michelle Rodriguez, if I could even do that? Well, let's think about Michelle Rodriguez. I mean, it's a Marvel movie, so I can do the obvious thing of doing, like, her to Groot, but I'm wondering if there's something else I can do with her to get her, like, faster to... She was in things like Resident Evil with Mila Jovovich. She was in things like SWAT with Colin Farrell, who is definitely not in Winter Soldier. Who else is in SWAT? Samuel. There you go. So Michelle Rodriguez. So there you go. Roy. I can't speak. Roy Schneider was in Jaws with Robert Shaw, who's in The Sting with Robert Redford. A lot of Roberts today. Who was in Captain America: The Winter Soldier with Samuel L. Jackson, who was in SWAT with the lovely Michelle Rodriguez.
Yes. Well done. How many was that?
Oh, geez. I don't know. That's an six? Amount. Like, yeah, like five. I mean, so
it's with a 6 degrees, counting, right? So those, you came in under.
I came in.
I think, did you?
I think I came in under six. Doesn't matter. I came in. I
Roy,
got it.
Rob. Nice. I think it's five.
I'm going to keep in your whispered count of that. All right, so I will challenge you now. No, don't be sorry. And just to be...
Yes.
Just to be nice.
Ooh.
Because I think this would be maybe something that's not impossible. Let's do John Lithgow. Who did we do last week? I'm just curious. Do I even have that written down? I do. It doesn't look like we did him. Good. Let's do Kurt Russell to John Lithgow.
I forget he's in F9. Cool.
Not in much of F9, but yeah, he's in a couple of scenes.
He's in a Pixley video.
Yeah.
Good work. Okay. Alrighty. John Lithgow to Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just because it seems like they came from
thinking
the same
decade.
Thinking
and talking. I'm thinking and talking. There, let's see.
I'll write this down, too. Let's see.
I immediately go to escape from New York for Mr. Russell. Mm. But he was also an overboard.
Yeah, that is the next one I thought of, too. It's funny.
Lovely Goldie Hawn. I feel like she's been in a lot of comedy pieces. Has Stone Lithgow been in anything with Chevy Chase in a movie?
Not that I can think of, okay. But maybe. I mean, that doesn't mean that necessarily that's not the case, but I don't know.
If I don't. And then I'm trying to think. So John Lithgow, I jumped to him for television, like I said, Third Rock from the Sun.
Mm.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. Okay, so my first move from John Lithgow, I would like to move to just Joseph Gordon-Levitt because I know he's been in a lot of films and can be, you know, potentially connected to Kurt Russell.
But were they in a film together?
I don't think they were in a film together.
We only connect through films, not through television, unfortunately.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess we could, okay. I don't know, maybe because you are then a guest, I don't so know. We can maybe change it up.
Okay, maybe I should allow this.
I'm not sure. But yeah, I don't know. Unless they've been in a movie together, John Lithgow and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I think we usually relate by movies, but...
Okay. Then I am trying to
But
think
animated movies
what...
work, too. So Shrek is definitely one. Bombshell is a big movie he was in. I'm trying to think of...
Mm-hmm.
Pet Sematary had the actor from Planet of the Apes movies, and also like Terminator Genesis. I don't remember who. That's right. Yeah, he was in The Accountant with someone like, and I'm trying not to leave you in the cold, I guess.
No, I appreciate this because I don't want to take too dang long.
Maybe
I'm trying
try
to think
some
of how to connect. To my problem is I don't know that many movies either that Kurt Russell has been in with other names other than Goldie Hawn. I'm struggling to think of.
He was also in
other
Grindhouse.
Co-stars he's had.
He was in Grindhouse.
Yeah. Okay. He's in Grindhouse, and okay, so. Then
John Lithgow was in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, but I don't know if that means that any of those actors even relate to like War of the Planet of the Apes. Or
I liked The Accountant. I enjoyed that movie, okay. Even though he is such a tiny role in that movie.
I didn't even mention this, but quick detour. He also was in the show Dexter, which I love him in the show Dexter. He plays a serial killer on that who kind
we
of competes with him.
Show.
I know, we
well,
can't use the
right.
show, but I wanted to shout that out.
Wait, why don't I see The Accountant on here, though? Because he's definitely in that film. There he is. Lamar Blackburn. What a bad guy name. Okay, so if John Lithgow was in The Accountant... with
this is tough
Batfleck so I think I can get from Batfleck very easily because wasn't Affleck in okay hold on I'm wondering if I can just do this because they both are in Kevin Smith movies and I can like if there's a mutual actor in Dogma and Clerks there's gotta be, right? There's gotta be. Who of Kevin Smith's friends?
Wait, but who are you trying to get from?
Rosario Dawson.
Oh.
Because of Grindhouse.
Oh.
Oh, no, wait. No, you're right. You can't. The same movie. I'm doing that wrong.
That's okay. No, this is
Kurt
definitely...
Kurt Russell. No, wait. Kurt Russell. No.
So Kurt Russell, he was in... I'm trying to think of more recent things Kurt Russell was in. Because I really can only think of Grindhouse off the top of my head right now. I apologize. I thought this would be easier. Oh, that's right. Okay, so he's also, once again, the Marvel Universe, but he is in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. He's in The Hateful Eight, which has a lot of people in it. Samuel again in that one. Sky High has... Mm-hmm. What's her face? What is her name? Kelly Preston, but that might also be a difficult way to go. This is tough. You have my sympathies. This is not easy. So Kurt Russell, I'm trying to think. Also was in Vanilla Sky. also was in Stargate, but I don't know of many actors who were in that, and now we're getting older in time. I think I have one that would work.
Cool. Give me a minute.
Sure. So, as a hint, Rosaria was in Death Proof with another actor. Well, you know, obviously, because it's Kurt Russell. And he was in another Tarantino movie with an actress that can connect with John Lithgow.
Wait, you're saying you can connect Kurt Russell to John Lithgow in one step?
No, two. There's an actor between them. There's an actor between John Lithgow and Kurt Russell. An actress. Technically. In another Tarantino movie.
Okay, wait. So...
Sorry, I've given too many hints. But yeah, from Death Proof, see if you can follow a Tarantino route. Like, because there's a Tarantino film that can get you to John Lithgow. John Lithgow isn't in the Tarantino film, but the actress who connects them is.
So what, you're saying an actress from Grindhouse? Or an actress from a different movie?
I'm saying... Oh.
Because I can't think of that other movie right now. I can only think of Grindhouse. Oh, I can't of other Tarantino movies he's even been in right now. I'm like, what else has he been in that's a Tarantino film? I can't think, so...
He was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Kurt Russell was. But I guess
I don't remember that at all.
I only do because he's on the poster. He's sort of like... He has sunglasses on and his arms are crossed and he's sort of like wearing this black shirt. But let me just double...
Wow, I really just remember Brad Pitt and that dog, and then Leo.
We only saw it once. We saw it together in theaters, and we all saw it once, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's an actress who can get you to John Lithgow from there. I guess I could just say it, but I wasn't sure.
To John Lithgow from Once Upon a Time...
In Hollywood.
In Hollywood... Has Margot Robbie been in something with John Lithgow?
Yeah.
I haven't seen Bombshell.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry. Well, I mean, hey, Isaac needed to help me out. I was definitely helped on the first episode. I think the first three episodes, I was not able to complete the Kevin Bacon game. I don't know. I didn't mean to, like, sorry, did I step on your toes? I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
But yeah, you're right. You haven't seen Bombshell, and maybe that's one of the few kind of connecting paths that
I'm
have.
I'm just hoping this will edit together to something nice for you guys.
It will. That was a tough one. That was a really tough one. I figured this one would be. Connecting F9 to all that jazz is an interesting thing. So usually at the end of this podcast, we end our show off, before our thank yous, we end off with what do you love. But we figured this week, since... This is all a little different format, and Natalie is, of course, a guest host on today. I guess we just thought it would be fun if maybe she just kind of spoke about the movies that Natalie loves and talks about, because Isaac and I have both kind of talked about our top five movies, and All That Jazz is one of Natalie's favorite movies, so we thought maybe this will be a good precedent to set with guests coming on, and we'll just ask them... I dropped my pen. We'll just ask them... if they want to compile a list of their favorite movies. And so, yeah, I guess. What movies do you love, Natalie?
My top five movies?
Yeah.
I will also start by saying that All That Jazz is in my top 10.
Oh, okay.
But it is not in my top five.
Okay, well, we could do top 10.
No. Okay. I don't want to overwhelm. My goodness, top five is so many.
That's true.
Did you guys start at 1 or 5? How did you do it?
We did one episode where we basically... Episode 5, I think, we mentioned our top 5 movies. And then episode 10, we went from 5 to 10. Or from 6 to 10.
Sorry. Did you go from 1 to 5 or from 5 to 1?
Oh. I think I went from 1 to 5. But you can go 5 to 1 if you would like to do that.
I'm trying to follow convention because we're so conventional.
Oh, I think we went 1 to 5. I think I did, at least.
Okay. My number one favorite film is Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah.
1968.
Great one.
Yeah, Claudia Cardinale.
The Blu-ray is staring at us right now. Yeah. It's in our living room. It's a great fucking film. Great film.
I love the score.
Yeah.
I am
Ennio Morricone. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Beautiful score, beautiful story. Love
the shots.
Oh yeah.
Second favorite movie. Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah.
From the 2015.
I think that was Mad Max Fury Road was somewhere in Isaac's top 10. You share a top 10 spot. Opa. Mad Max Fury Road rules. Enough said.
What's not to love?
It's not to love. It's badass. Beautiful chicks, badass dudes. It's amazing. Sorry, yeah. Maybe that's a little sexy.
It's okay. Don't forget the cars.
And the cars are the ladies. I'm just kidding. Sorry, go ahead.
Ladies driving cars.
Yeah.
Number 3. Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, 1981.
Which I guess is just Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? Like, is it officially called Indiana Jones, or was it just called Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Probably Raiders of the Lost Ark, but I...
That's okay.
But I wonder if there was a retrofit, because now I just think of it as Indiana Jones. We're querying. Hey, I think it might actually be now Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
IMDb seems to say that. Yeah, I thought it was
original title, though, is the subnote, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I guess, yeah, they must have just realized that because...
It wasn't maybe a franchise before, or they felt it was too long.
Yeah, maybe just like you said, because they've made it into a franchise, they've decided to tack on the Indiana Jones part. But yeah, I always just think of that movie as Raiders. Because yeah, if you look at the poster, the word Raiders is like the biggest word. And I always just thought that could have been the fucking title of the movie.
No, you're absolutely right. I bet some producer felt that Indiana Jones wouldn't have been an established character. So.
Interesting.
If the note was given.
These are all great fucking movies.
I need to do some more research. This is all out of my ass. I don't know. That this movie soundtrack is my ringtone.
Of course.
I know that it is terrible archaeology and a little bit of a little bit of a travel tourist notion sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But man, if you know, the spirit of adventure is just really nice and strong, and I just think it's funny because after I finish with my top three, I can't help but notice that all three of my top favorite movies involve sand, just lots of sand.
And my three top favorite movies involve Books of the Dead. So, yeah, we both have very thematic top threes.
We are of a type.
Yes.
I apparently love sand and adventure.
You love sand.
I'm okay with sand. I don't love sand. I don't know what that means about me.
It's coarse. It gets everywhere.
My number 4 favorite movie is actually Flashdance.
Yeah.
1983.
Yeah, I'll really quickly...
Another dance.
Even though this is about your love, I fell in love with Flashdance one day in college, I think when I was kind of recovering from a stomach virus. And I remember one morning I stumbled out into the common room area with my water and a blanket, and I just sort of laid down on the couch and turned on the TV and just wanted to like relax and zone out to something, and Flashdance had just started, and I was like, all right, I'll give this fucking movie a try, and it's amazing. It's probably, yeah, it's probably one of my favorite dance movies for sure. It's an amazing dance movie.
She has a pitbull. What's not to love?
Oh yeah.
Well, actually, the romance is to not love.
Not to love the romance.
Don't love how they depict that going down, but I really enjoy her and the narrative.
Yeah, no, it was a great movie.
And the final dance, man.
It helped me get over that stomach virus, so I appreciated it. I did. And Bruckheimer, so I mean, legendary director. And us also, the director is oh gosh, Fatal Attraction, I believe, isn't it? Maybe it's not that director.
The director of Flashdance is Adrian Lin.
Oh, okay. So it is the same director as Fatal Attraction and like Jacob's Ladder and stuff. Okay, cool.
Yes, sir.
I thought it was that. Yeah, weird team up, those two. That director and
potentially unhealthy views on sexual relationships between adults.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, slightly overall, great dance film. Very, like, especially that final dance number. Very, what would you say? Powerful. Yeah, I don't know. It's an amazing final dance number. That's all.
And then my fifth favorite movie is You Were Never Really Here.
Yes.
Which I hope is still available on, was it Amazon?
It's an Amazon Prime movie,
from
I think.
2018.
By Lynn Ramsey.
By Lynn Ramsey.
We share that in common on our top 10. I think that's like my number 10, You Were Never Really Here. Yeah, we watched that together and really loved it. That's a really, I think we've watched it twice together, actually, or like maybe even three times. It's a fantastic movie. And yeah, I think it's still on Amazon because that was an Amazon Prime Studios or Amazon Studios movie.
Yeah, Lynn Ramsey of We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Ratcatcher, which we own but still need to see. Mm-hmm. And also...
Malvern Keller?
Yeah, Malvern Keller. Such a good movie. Lynn Ramsey's a great director. Cool. Awesome top five. I think those are great fucking movies all around. Yeah, no, awesome. And interesting that you had one in common with Isaac and one in common with me. That's interesting.
Hey, it's got to mean something.
I think we might have maybe even, when Isaac and I were compiling our top 10 list, I think you were kind of inspired to do it as well. So I might have honestly seen you when you were never really here. And I might have even been like, yeah, that is one of my favorite movies from recent memory.
So good.
It's so good. And with that, our dear listeners... That is our episode 44, All That Jazz.
I didn't give All That Jazz my rating.
Oh, well, I mean, hey, you don't always have to, but what is the rating you would like to give All That Jazz?
Do you give half sets to 8.5 out of 10?
Sure, you can give it whatever you want, whatever number you want, 8.5 out of 10, cool. I don't give halves, but that's fine. I just go whole numbers. But the Dewey Decimal System, that works.
Thank you for watching it with me.
Yeah.
I agree with you, I think, on a lot of things, and all art is, you know, somewhat in the eye of the beholder.
That's very true.
It's like music, and you said the music didn't really work always for you, and yeah. I have absolutely... music that doesn't work for me. It's all about finding what works for you and then using that to your advantage. And it's really cool that we connected on so much. And
yeah,
thank you again
for letting me
come on. This has been really exciting.
This has been so much fun. Thank you. Yeah, up front, thanks Natalie for coming on. Yeah, this is my, I guess it was a pleasure having you on as a guest.
Thank you to you and Isaac for giving us such great content.
Oh,
I really appreciate it.
So kind of
as a listener.
And for our listeners, if you've listened to this entire thing, thank you so much. Please, if you want to leave us a review, you can go over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify to leave us a review, which helps us with recommendations. That would be greatly appreciated. If you want to continue the conversation, tell me I'm an idiot for disliking the brilliance that is All That Jazz.
Crazy because this movie is very, very long and strange.
Or that as well. Maybe if you agree with me, reach out to us. PickYourTakePod@gmail.com is our email. We have a Twitter @PickYourTake, a Facebook, and on YouTube. We're posting short clips, and we engage with anyone who comments with us there as well. So, yeah, if you want to continue the conversation, please do. Thanks to Audio Boom for distribution, Dude Robots for our theme song. Oh, my gosh. Sean Regan for our artwork. Usually Isaac does this part. Who am I forgetting? Other special... I usually think special thanks to Natalie for marketing, who is in front of me now. And also Audacity. Maybe just a really quick thing, shout out. This podcast, I've gone through three different softwares for audio recording on my end. And so far, Audacity. Is it pronounced Audacity? Yeah, Audacity. Audacity so far is the one that is awesome. And I record on Audacity. So thanks to Audacity. I'm going to shout Audacity. Them out. And yeah, thanks.
Thanks to the content creators.
Thanks to the filmmakers.
Thanks to the brave artists.
And thank you, Natalie. Thank you for coming on. And this isn't a couple. This isn't a, what do you call it, a romantic couples podcast. This is a movie review podcast. But I love you, Natalie, and thank you for coming on today.
Oh, well, thanks. I love you, Chris. And I love you guys. I hope you all have a wonderful day.
Love you guys. And love you, Isaac. Hope you're feeling wetter. Wetter. Well, hey,
you don't want to be too dry now, do you? No, you certainly don't.
Drown that cold. Drown that sickness. Hope you're feeling better, Isaac. And yeah, hopefully we will have you back on next week and talk to you guys next week.